Well, as we all know from the news or from practical experience, London hospitals are full. There's no space on the wards. There's patients on the trolleys, in the corridors. Question is, why is this? Now, don't worry, I'm not talking politics. Much more simply, there's an obvious reason, isn't there, why the hospitals are full. There are too many patients. We all know, don't we? It's a fact of life. People get sick, they contract diseases, tumours grow. I guess we're all used to it, but then at the same time, it can sometimes hit us, can't it, when it strikes us again. Maybe on the news, we've heard recently Stephen Fry or Bill Turnbull were revealing their diagnoses and treatment. But then at other times, it comes closer to home. Even as I was preparing this talk this week, I received news about a distant relative of mine called Geller. Now, Geller was a proud Welshman. He lived near Llandyssil. He couldn't really speak English very well, and he wouldn't leave Wales unless he really had to. So I was deeply honoured when he came all the way to Oxford to attend my wedding. But the phone call was telling me that this week he passed away, aged 91. And that is our experience, isn't it, in this world. We keep asking, what can be done? And on the medical side, there has been remarkable progress, hasn't there, in science and technology, but not enough. Cancer Research, the very large charity, has as its slogan, "Let's beat cancer sooner." They raise huge amounts of money and they spend it on research. But that slogan is not yet true. It's still not beaten. All too often, doctors still come alongside their patients to say, sorry, there's nothing more that we can do. Well, we long for someone who can do something. And with that in mind, let's turn now to our next instalment from Matthew's Gospel. In one of these church Bibles you'll find at the end of the pew, it's Matthew chapter 8 is on page 980. 980, Matthew chapter 8. And I will read it for us. Our next instalment begins at verse 14 of Matthew chapter 8. When Jesus entered Peter's house, he saw his mother-in-law lying sick with a fever. He touched her hand and the fever left her, and she rose and began to serve him. That evening they brought to Jesus many who were oppressed by demons, and he cast out the spirits with a word and healed all who were sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. He took our illnesses and bore our diseases. Now when Jesus saw a crowd around him, he gave orders to go over to the other side. And a scribe came up and said to him, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." Another of the disciples said to him, "Lord, let me first go and bury my father." Jesus said to him, "Follow me and leave the dead to bury their own dead." So we've been going through Matthew's Gospel, and in chapters 5 to 7, we listened to Jesus' famous teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, and we heard him teach with great authority. And now we've started in chapter 8, and we've seen that authority being exercised in practice. Over the last couple of weeks, we've seen a touch from Jesus, and a leper was healed. Then, do you remember the centurion? He said to Jesus, "Just say the word," which Jesus did, and his paralyzed servant was made well. We are seeing here in Matthew 8 the authority of God himself at work in our world. And again, we see that today. And first of all, we see now that unlike anyone else, Jesus can make us right. Jesus can make us right. So the scene was set, wasn't it, where Jesus entered Peter's house and there's his mother-in-law lying sick with a fever. And it's fair to say this is not a happy Mother's Day in Galilee. When we hear the word fever here, we could easily not grasp the seriousness of what it's talking about. This is not fever as in man flu. This is a life-threatening illness. Death is approaching, and they've probably had the conversation, nothing more can be done. So what could Jesus do? Well, we heard it, didn't we, in verse 15. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she rose and began to serve him. We sometimes talk, don't we, of the healing touch. Well, here we really see that. Peter's mother-in-law, one moment, life ebbing away. A touch from Jesus, here she is up on her feet, serving the guests. And it's no one off, is it, from Jesus, as we read on, verse 16. That evening they brought to him many. Well, of course they did. They brought to him many who were oppressed by demons. He cast out the spirits of the word, and he healed all who were sick. Isn't that amazing? All of them. Whatever their complaint, whatever their struggle, he healed them. Those oppressed by demons, he could cast them out no more. So imagine next day going to the hospitals of Galilee. Empty. No more. Jesus had healed them all. And notice, because there's so many people involved, there would have been lots of witnesses. We are not talking about here the kind of healer we might get today, where there's very little evidence of what has really happened. All the locals would know full well. Matthew's recorded the historical evidence for us. There is someone who entered our world who can make a difference. He can deal with what blights our lives. There is one who can make us right. Now, if all this took place, there should be lots of questions on our minds. Can we really share in this? Or maybe, well, why do Christians then still suffer and die? Which are good questions. And as we read on, there'll be answers to them. But here, Matthew wants us to appreciate why it is Jesus can do this. What makes him able to do what nobody else can do? Well, we are to see that Jesus can make our world right by his death on the cross. And that's verse 17, where Matthew tells us, this was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. He took our illnesses and bore our diseases. There's a reminder that we've seen it all through Matthew's gospel. Jesus didn't just appear from nowhere on planet Earth. There were scriptures, the Old Testament, which for centuries had been pointing forward to say what God would do in our world. In particular, the scriptures said God would send his king to rescue and rule his people, the Christ. And the Old Testament said you won't miss him. He'll heal the sick. He'll open the eyes of the blind. He'll make the lame walk. And of course, Jesus does all those things. But if we had time to dig into Isaiah, we'd realize the verse that Matthew chooses to quote is quite a surprising one, because he doesn't quote any of those verses about opening the blinds of the eyes or helping the lame walk. He does this verse where he says, Jesus took our diseases and bore our illnesses and bore our diseases. Now, those are the words of Isaiah, but they come from a chapter in Isaiah, which if you look it up, chapter 53, we heard it read earlier, is all about Jesus' death. So someone who knew Isaiah might say, well, why does Matthew point us there when he could have pointed to all those other verses? But of course, Matthew knows what he's doing. Yes, Jesus is the king who can make people better in all those physical ways. But why can he do it? How can he do what nobody else can do? How can he heal the sick and drive out the demons? And to answer that question, we have to ask, well, why is the world as it is? Why is it so broken? And why is there so much hurt? And the answer of the Bible, of course, is that it's our fault, humanity. We turned against the Creator who gave us every good thing and spoilt it all. That's why our bodies don't work anymore as they should. That's why we fall ill. That's why we die. Because of our sin, the world is under God's judgment, and we see that. The point is, if Jesus is going to make us better physically, he has to deal with the root issue, what's causing it all. That is our sin and the judgment it deserves from God. And so that's why Matthew says, well, look to this chapter in Isaiah. Do you see now why Jesus had to die on the cross? It was so that he could put everything right. Our sin, to take our judgment and then deal with all of its effects, like sickness and demons. That is what was needed to put our world right. Well, if we're following Jesus so far and what he's been doing, that does lead to one important question, which is, will you follow? Now, if we were in Galilee in these days, Jesus would be very easy to find. He'd be the one with a huge crowd around him, of course. And they were thinking, weren't they, we want to be with Jesus. And the same should be true for anyone reading Matthew's Gospel. If this is true, if this is history, we want a piece of the action. We want a bit of what Jesus seems to be able to do. And that's not a bad thing in and of itself. Jesus came to give. But what does that mean to be with Jesus, to follow him? So straight after this, after, if you like, our interest is piqued, we think we might want to follow, what does that look like? Well, Matthew highlights two issues for us by focusing on two particular individuals. The first issue is comfort. That begins to come in verse 19. A scribe came up and said to Jesus, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Now, he has seen what Jesus can do. He wants a part of it. He wants to be with Jesus. And what he says sounds so positive, and we can understand it. He says, "Jesus, I'm with you. I'll come where you go." Question is, what does the scribe think that will look like? Where does he think Jesus will take him? Well, Jesus wants to make sure he's got realistic expectations. And so verse 20, Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." Son of Man. Now, what does that mean? This is the first time in Matthew's Gospel that Jesus used that title. He'll use it many more times as we read on. And again, anyone who knew their Bibles, the Old Testament, would know. Because in the book of Daniel, we hear about a glorious figure who every nation would worship and bow down to, who would have everlasting dominion. And he was called the Son of Man. And now, Jesus stunningly is saying, "That's me." And yet, with the very same breath, he says that he, the Son of Man, has nowhere to lay his head. He says the wild animals and the birds have got it better than me. So let me ask, what do we think following Jesus will be like? He is a powerful king, but do we think then that will bring us comfort and ease, that that will mean earthly security? Well, Jesus seems to undermine this scribe who seems to be thinking like that. Jesus is saying, well, if you want to follow me, look at the one you want to follow. And so Jesus is saying that if we never feel uncomfortable following him, if we don't really have any idea what he's talking about with this lack of security, then maybe we should ask ourselves, are we truly following Jesus at all? The Jesus who had nowhere to lay his head. Now, I'm sure that wasn't the response the scribe was expecting. We're not told what he then said or did. He had said he would follow wherever, but Jesus seems to have known what he was really saying. He maybe had to have a radical rethink, the issue of comfort. And then there's a second aspect of following Jesus that is highlighted here for us, and it's commitment. That's verse 21. Another of the disciples said to Jesus, "Lord, let me first go and bury my father." Well, as we hear this and hear what the man says, we might assume that the man's father has just died and the funeral is approaching. More likely is that the father was maybe elderly or unwell. And this man is saying, "I just need to care for my father until he passes away." And no doubt the man had in his mind the commandment to honour parents, so surely Jesus would be sympathetic to his request. Verse 22, Jesus said to him, "Follow me, and leave the dead to bury their own dead." Now what says here is, first of all, confusing, but then shocking. Let's think of the confusing bit first. How can the dead bury their own dead? And as we think about it, we realize Jesus must be talking about dead in two different ways. There's, if you like, the more straightforward, physically dead. They are the ones that need burying. But who will bury them? Well, Jesus says the dead will. So although he describes this second group as dead, it can't be that they're physically dead. They must be physically alive, and yet they are dead in some sense, which must mean in Jesus' language they are spiritually dead. That is, although they walk about in front of us, they have no life with God, the kind of life that matters. And once we've understood that, well, what Jesus says comes as a shock. So the man said, "Let me go and bury my father." Jesus says, "No." Jesus says, "Follow me instead." He says, "Let those who are spiritually dead, who won't follow me, deal with the physically dead. You come after me." Do you remember Jesus, the Son of Man, the glorious King with authority, which is exactly who he is. So he says, "Me first, follow." Even taking priority over family members. So is Jesus saying that followers of his shouldn't go to their own parents' funeral? No. Is Jesus saying that his followers shouldn't care for maybe elderly parents? Again, no. And in fact, probably Jesus would say the commandment to honour your parents means we should take that much more seriously than we do, to care for our parents. But maybe Jesus is responding to the language the man had used. Notice again what he said. The man had asked Jesus in verse 21 if he could first go and bury his father. "No," says Jesus, "first follow me." Jesus is saying he takes priority, even over our otherwise closest relationships. You see, the man had addressed Jesus as Lord. Do you see that? But Jesus wants him to realize that is exactly who he is, even before family. Today, around the world, it is family pressures that exert an almost overwhelming pressure for people not to follow Jesus. And even in this country, that can happen. And then maybe with that, there can be times where parental expectations can live with someone, well, supposedly having a respectable level of following Jesus. But parents don't want their offspring to give Jesus everything. I wonder this morning if we feel the force of these words from Jesus. Now, extremism is a bad word, isn't it, today? And yet we can't deny that what Jesus demands of his followers sounds pretty extreme, at least to the world's ears. I guess the world hearing this would think, well, that sounds worrying, even dangerous. And I'm sure there are moments where we feel that, where we feel the deep discomfort that it is to follow Jesus. And maybe relationships that try as hard as we have been to be loving and honouring have become strained because we've put Jesus first. But we're learning again, Jesus has the authority not just to heal but to call people to follow him. Jesus doesn't want rash followers. He doesn't want half-hearted followers. Notice Jesus doesn't try and trick anyone, pull the wool over our eyes. There's no small print here because you don't need it. I'm assuming that many who heard Jesus say this back then and today will then in some way choose to pull back. "No thanks, not for us." I guess they might openly turn away, or they'll try and decide for themselves what following Jesus looks like on their terms. It may be that they end up looking very religious, but not really listening to Jesus and following him at all. And yet some then and now do follow. Why is that? Well, that brings us quite simply, doesn't it, back to Matthew 8. Jesus really is the king. He does have this astonishing authority, which he always uses for good. He can put right what is so wrong in our world. He can put us right, and nobody else can do that. And although it's a challenge to follow, we do know that for us to be his followers, Jesus went all the way to enduring agony on a cross. We know Jesus cares and has our best interests at heart. So though it will be a challenge, we trust him and we will choose to follow. Here is the one who took our sin, our illnesses, our diseases upon himself and has dealt with them once and for all. Isn't that just a wonderful king for us to follow? Let me lead us in a prayer as we close. Our Father, we do praise you for this wonderful king you have given to us. Thank you that he can put right what is so wrong with our world, that he can deal with sin and its effects, even at the cost of his death on the cross. So thank you, one day we will be with Jesus in this new world where these things will be no more. And so we ask that you'd help us to follow King Jesus as we should and to serve him wholeheartedly. And we do pray that would lead to many more coming to experience these lasting benefits of knowing him as the King. Amen.